listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Brian Groves. He is the CEO and a director of Genesis Metals Corp. He's had an extensive experience over 30 years as an exploration geologist in Australia and Canada, and he has been involved in looking for all sorts of minerals, including coal, gold, diamonds, base metals. He was with major mining companies through his younger years, AMAX, Noranda, and Placer Dome, for example. Hard to get find companies that are more stellar than those. Since then, since 2003, he's been involved with as a chief executive officer of two Canadian venture exchange listed exploration companies, and really, I think the shareholders of Genesis Metals are well served by his presence there. Thanks for joining me again, Brian. It's really good to have you with me.
Thanks very much, Jay, for having me on your show again. I'm very happy to be here.
Always good to have you. I especially like to talk to people who have a company that's worth a lot more than the market indicates, which I think is the case in Genesis Metals. It's why I own the stock and why it's in my newsletter. I should tell our listeners that your company trades in Toronto under the symbol GIS, and you can buy it in the States, as I have, over the counter market, GGISF. 71.8 million shares out, and in U.S. money this morning anyway, when I looked, it was a mere 7 cents, giving it a market cap in U.S. money of $5 million. I think that's a remarkably low market cap for with so much going on. So that's what we want to ask you about. Now, you, I think I purchased the stock. I think we recommended it. Actually, I purchased it at 12 and a half cents. I mentioned it's 7 cents, so I'm underwater by quite a bit, but I'm not selling. Brian, talk to us a little bit about your Chevrier project up there in Quebec. You do have a 43-101 resource on it, about 300,000 ounces, but, I mean, it's very easy, I think, to see potential for a lot more than that. Talk to us a little bit. Just give us an overview of the project for those that may not be familiar.
Sure, very happy to do so. Chevrier is it's actually in the extreme eastern end of the what's called the Abitibi Greenstone Belt, the big belt that runs through Ontario and Quebec that has hosted in excess of 170 million ounces of production, of gold production, over the years. So we are close to a town called Chibougamau, a bit of a tongue twister, but it has the project has excellent infrastructure. We're approximately 35 kilometers, about 25 miles south of the town of Chibougamau. It's a small town, but it's well serviced by air connections, daily air connections with the city of Montreal. So it's a very easy commute to get to the property, and you can be on the project within about 20 minutes of getting off the plane at the airport, the local airport. It's a gold project. It's seen various iterations of exploration over the years with some quite well-known names such as InMet, which is maybe well-known to some of your listeners as Falconbridge Copper.
It
was a mid-tier blue-chip they're really a base metal producer, but they did several campaigns of work on the Chevrier, and various historic resource estimates were calculated. It was those resource estimates which attracted us to the property. You did mention that there is a 43-101 compliant resource estimate that was completed in 2010. And it, for the main zone, it came up with about 300,000 ounces at just under 2 grams per ton. Many of the historical resource estimates were much larger than that. And again, a lot of the work that we're doing on Chevrier is really aimed at validating those historic data. So we can use a lot of the old drill data in an updated resource estimate. And our current timeline is we plan to have that resource update completed by mid-2018.
And, okay.
So that's
yeah. So let me ask you, Brian, the 300,000 ounces is the current compliant resources. That you said that's from the main zone, right? And is there a potential to expand that in the main zone?
Yeah, Jay, we see the opportunity really as being, you know, coming up with a better understanding of what controls the gold distribution. We think the 2010 report may have been somewhat conservative, so hence we are looking at the geological model that was used to arrive at that number in 2010. Mm-hmm. So our geologists are busily relogging core, developing geological models and whatnot to better understand grade distribution, and hence look for areas where we could potentially add to the known mineralized envelope. What we do know about the main zone at the present time is that it's a fairly large mineralized envelope. It's about 1.2 kilometers long, up to about 200 meters wide, and it does come to surface. So it does present the opportunity of potentially an open pittable development at some stage in the future, which is a real advantage.
Sure.
Given the overall grade profile of somewhere around 2 grams, having that potential for open pit development is clearly advantageous. We also have a second zone called the South Zone, which is about 1 kilometer south of the main zone, and it's had very little drilling by comparison to the main zone. And just for context, main zone, we discovered about 70,000 meters of historic core in very good condition, very well documented. So a lot of the work that we've done since we acquired the project in the first quarter of 2016 has been aimed at just updating the database, you know, taking paper copies of drill logs and assay records, entering them into an updated digital database to allow geological modeling. And that takes a lot of time. And the other part of the process, and hence why we're talking about a mid-2018 resource estimate, is that validation process also has to meet a regulatory oversight in terms of both mm-hmm. TSX and the respective security commissions. So, you know, we have to be diligent at how the work we're doing, you know, in terms of bringing those old historic data into a compliant database to be used for an updated resource.
I understand that actually InMet did some work on that South Zone, perhaps. And if I heard you right, or if I don't know if it's you or somebody, I have the impression that there's something like potentially two times as much tonnage there with similar grade as to what you have in the main zone. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Potentially,
yes. The 2010 report actually quantified the South Zone as they felt the drill spacing was too wide to allow them mm-hmm. to calculate an inferred resource, but they called it a mineral inventory, and it quantifies as an amount of gold that's roughly twice what the main zone was. So we see that as an area that we will be focusing on in 2018 as well. It's part of the deposit. The South Zone does lie under a shallow lake, but we have engineered drilling setups that would allow us to drill the South Zone from the shoreline with a minimal increase in drill meterage, which is a really advantageous.
Sure.
Given some of the slip compliance and regulatory requirements that must be met for drilling on ice at the present time, you know, you're always concerned about spillage of oil and so on and so forth. So mm-hmm. this mitigates a lot of the concerns that would be involved in drilling on the ice, and it also allows us the flexibility of drilling the South Zone at any time during the year, so we're not restricted to a winter drill program.
You've completed your phase one drill program, 5,000 meters, I believe. What have you learned from that?
That 5,000 meters was roughly evenly split between testing new targets away from the main and the South Zone areas, but also applying around about 2,500 meters into the main zone to start that validation process that I referred to earlier. So that validation process is a combination of drilling new holes into the mineralized area, either as twinned holes, that is holes very close to existing historic holes, or between existing historic holes, that then allows a resource modeling group, an independent consulting group, to validate those data. We're also tested some, as I said, some targets well away from the main zone. They weren't as successful as we had hoped. We did, however, discover a new zone of mineralization around about 3 to 4 kilometers north of the main zone in an area that had seen little, if any, exploration work. So I think the old adage about projects, historic projects being well-drilled but poorly explored rings true in this case. There's been lots of drilling on Chevrier, but it is a very large property package in excess of 120 square kilometers. Wow. So we still have, and the known zones of mineralization probably comprise less than 4% of that physical area of 120 square kilometers. So still lots of potential, but our main focus is to, as I said, do sufficient work on the main zone to allow us to validate the historic data and use it for an updated resource.
Brian, what do you think? You're an exploration company. I don't think there's any intention of being a producer, but what do you think you need in terms of ounces to get, say, a mid-tier producer interested or a major company interested? Would 2 million ounces do it, potentially, for a mid-tier and 5 million for a major?
I think the target audience, if I can use that term, would be junior producers to mid-tier producers, those for which they're probably less concerned about annual production ounces as the operating margin and the profit margin per ounce. So I think in our case, if we can get to a threshold that's 1 to 1.5 million ounces potentially either combined or standalone within the main zone, I think that may attract the attention of a junior producer or a mid-tier producer. We see lots of advantages in terms of the cost base where we are. We have a very skilled workforce. The scale of the project would mean that we would have minimal exposure to U.S. dollar exchange risk, I'm sure all your listeners are quite well aware of the gyrations of gold price in the U.S. Denominated in U.S. dollars, but when you look at the Canadian dollar gold price, it has stayed fairly flat. So making long-term investment decisions would be quite possible in that regard. The scale of the property and the project would be not exposing it to large capital items that would be sourced from the U.S. So we see a fairly attractive operating cost base. Again, high voltage power lines transect the property. We have gravel road access within, as I said, 20 to 25 minutes of an airport, close to a town with a skilled workforce. So we see lots of advantages in that regard. So I think that would be the threshold that we would be hopefully achieving and targeting, you know, that group of companies, producing companies, as potential suitors.
Well, certainly as you move towards those levels, it's hard to see a 7-cent stock. Then I would say you have some pretty essential shareholders too, I think. Would you care to just, with a few minutes left, tell us who some of your major shareholders are?
Yeah, certainly, Jay. We're very fortunate. We closed a $4 million Canadian financing in June of this year, and we managed to attract Osisko Mining, Eric Sprott personally, U.S. Global Investors, Gold 2000, and a fund out of Vancouver as well. And we're very fortunate to attract the quality of shareholders to our story. We have watched the stock price, its tax loss selling time, as I think you may have alluded to in many times in your articles, and we are unfortunately not immune to that. The whole sector has experienced some downward pressure on their stock prices as a consequence. We see it as a very temporary thing that come January with the abatement in tax loss selling as the year end approaches will be a different situation. And we are closing in on the completion of the second phase of drilling, another 5,000 meters as well. We expect that drilling to be completed this week. And again, with assays due to be released next month. So I think that will present another catalyst to perhaps bring some life back into the stock. And again, with the long view points that most of our significant new shareholders have, I think that will be great support as we go forward.
Brian, just real quickly now, because we're out of time, you raised $4 million in June. Will that take you through how far?
That will allow us to complete this, the 10,000 meter program, the two phases totaling 10,000 meters. We will probably exit 2017 with approximately $1.3 million in the treasury. And then, as I said, with the luxury now knowing that we can drill the South Zone anytime during Q1 or Q2 next year, we're not restricted to, to a winter program that would potentially deplete the reserve, the treasury very quickly. We do have some flexibility in terms of where we are with our cash position.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you very much for the update, Brian. Look forward to keeping up with your story and a much higher share price in 2018.
I agree with you, but thanks very much, Jay, for having me.
You bet. Well, okay, folks, we do have to go to commercial break, but don't go away because Jeff Clark will be with us for the first time. He's with goldsilver.com. He has a pretty bullish outlook, it seems, on gold, so stick around to hear what Jeff has to say. We'll be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
Bonterra Resources, a Canadian exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. In 2017, Bonterra raised $40 million and attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kinross, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based VanEck Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource model in 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000-plus meters of drilling where the dimensions of the Gladiator gold deposit has been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under BONXF.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.